Welcome to As It Is, a 30-minute program designed for English learners. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
We also explain words and language rules, all while bringing you stories and information from around the world. Donald Trump officially became the Republican nominee for president at the Republican National Convention in Cleveland, Ohio, this week. Trump defeated 16 other candidates to win the nomination. The 4-day convention did not show as much unity as the nominee had hoped for. Trump's campaign spent the first 2 days of the convention explaining accusations of plagiarism over a speech given by his wife, Melania. The speech contained similar sentences to ones in the speech given by First Lady Michelle Obama at the 2008 Democratic Convention. Former competitors Marco Rubio, Chris Christie, and Ben Carson joined other Republicans to support Trump's candidacy. Both Christie and Carson spoke on Tuesday, aiming strong criticism at the Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton. Rubio spoke in a taped message 1 day later. On Wednesday, Senator Ted Cruz of Texas spoke at the convention. He was Trump's strongest opponent in a race for the nomination that many observers considered very divisive. Cruz refused to support or endorse Trump. Instead, he asked delegates to stand and speak and vote your conscience. Former House Speaker Newt Gingrich followed the Texas senator. He said Trump understood the threat of Islamic extremism better than Hillary Clinton. He also addressed Cruz's speech, saying that if people vote their conscience, they would support Trump. The controversy overshadowed the appearance of Indiana Governor Mike Pence. He gave his acceptance speech as the party's vice presidential candidate. Trump will face Hillary Clinton in the general election this November. Clinton is scheduled to accept the Democratic nomination next week at its convention in Philadelphia.
Donald Trump has taken an untraditional path to win the nomination. He has never held a public office. On June 16, 2015, Trump announced his candidacy from the lobby of his apartment building in New York. Trump said, "I'm really rich." And he added, "I will be the greatest jobs president that God ever created." Trump has spoken about the unemployment rate in America. During the campaign, he has said China, Japan, and Mexico have taken those jobs. He said Mexico and other Latin American countries have sent illegal immigrants to the United States. Trump has been strongly criticized for saying, "They're bringing drugs, they're bringing crime, they're rapists." Trump promised to build a great wall on the border with Mexico to keep immigrants out, and that he will have Mexico pay for that wall. Other candidates spent money to buy advertising during the primary elections. Trump spread his message and attacked opponents on free television, radio, and social media. Trump has made many controversial comments during the campaign. Speaking of Republican Senator John McCain, he said, "He's not a war hero. I like people who weren't captured." Senator McCain ran for president as a Republican in 2008. He was shot down during the Vietnam War and was tortured as a prisoner of war. Many Democrats and Republicans condemned Trump when he called for a ban on all Muslims entering the United States. Many criticized Trump for saying U.S. District Court Judge Gonzalo Curiel cannot rule fairly because of his Mexican heritage. Curiel is hearing the case against Trump University. People who paid money to take real estate classes at Trump University are bringing a legal case against Trump. Others disagreed when Trump praised former Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein for killing terrorists.
Trump was born June 14, 1946, in Queens, New York. He graduated from the New York Military Academy and later completed a study program at the Wharton School of Finance at the University of Pennsylvania. Trump started in business by working for his father, who was a wealthy real estate developer in Queens. During New York's financial crisis, Trump received reduced taxes from the city to build a hotel in Manhattan. The deal was the first of many projects for the developer, from casinos to golf courses. For a short period, Trump owned a sports team and a small airline company. In 1991, he sought bankruptcy protection when some of his businesses did not make enough money to pay the loans. It was the first of four bankruptcy filings by Trump companies. Trump used his name to sell neckties, water, wines, steaks, books, and magazines. He launched the reality TV show, The Apprentice, and produced a business seminar called Trump University. In the 1990s, Trump's name became a headline for New York's newspapers when he divorced his first wife, Ivana, and married Marla Maples, a little-known actress. He is now married to Melania Noss, a former model from Slovenia. The businessman has five children by three wives.
Turkish leaders are saying life will continue as normal for most people despite a state of emergency. The state of emergency, approved by Turkey's parliament, gives more powers to Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan. It allows him to expand a crackdown begun after last week's failed coup led by some members of Turkey's military. Already, thousands of people have been arrested. But Mehmet Şimşek, Turkey's deputy prime minister, said most people won't see major changes in their lives. Life of ordinary people and businesses will go unimpacted, uninterrupted. Business will be as usual, he wrote on Twitter. The parliament on Thursday voted 356 to 115 to approve the three-month state of emergency. Erdogan said he needs new powers to rid the military of the virus of subversion. The Associated Press reported Thursday that the government arrested nearly 10,000 people and closed hundreds of schools. It said 58,881 civil service workers were dismissed, forced to resign, or had their licenses taken away. And academic leaders and teachers were banned from leaving Turkey. The lynching has started, said Beza Austin, an official of the Kurdish-led People's Democratic Party. Her opinion reflects the concern of Turkish minority groups of more threats to their rights. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry criticized the coup attempt, but he also said, "We need to have Turkey respect democracy, human rights, and fundamental freedoms." President Barack Obama called Erdogan on Tuesday. He said the United States would assist Turkey's investigation of those responsible for the coup, according to the White House. But Obama also urged the Turkish president to avoid reducing public confidence in Turkey's democracy. "Turkey is very important to the United States' battle against Islamic State militants. It uses a military base in Turkey to conduct air attacks against IS in Syria and Iraq." Simsek, the deputy prime minister, said there could have been carnage in the streets if last week's coup succeeded. He said the government is going after those who organized and carried out the coup. "We owe it to our people to go after them," he said. "We will have a legal framework for it." In a televised speech to the nation on Wednesday, Erdogan said the state of emergency would protect Turkey's democracy. "This measure is in no way against democracy, the law, and freedoms," he said. Erdogan has been accused of taking too much power for himself even before the current state of emergency. And some world leaders called on Erdogan to end the state of emergency as soon as possible. German Foreign Minister Frank-Walter Steinmeier said it is important the rule of law is kept in Turkey. He said Turkey should keep the state of emergency only for as long as necessary and then immediately end it. I'm Bruce Alpert.
Ten London startup businesses have made inquiries about moving to Berlin since Britain voted to leave the European Union. The business development group Berlin Partner made the announcement Monday. Each of the new businesses have between 10 and 18 employees. These small businesses are concerned about issues such as the cost of commercial property, the labor market, and the availability of accommodations. Berlin Partner director Stefan Fransk spoke at a news conference. He said that financial technology companies, known as fintechs, have shown the most interest in moving to Berlin from London. Along with other European cities, Berlin wants to attract companies in London's fintech industry. The German capital says it is an affordable and resourceful substitute to other cities. Berlin's Senator for Economics, Technology, and Research, Cornelia Itza, has sent hundreds of letters to British firms. She also has traveled to a conference called London Fintech Week. Itza wanted to encourage startup leaders to move their businesses to Berlin. Other companies, such as Berlin Partner, are also attempting to get startups to move to Germany from London. Berlin Partner has launched a website in English that has information about how to set up a business. The company is also going to open an office in London in October to try to woo more companies. A report by the accounting company Ernst & Young said Berlin attracted more than $2 billion in investment capital for startup businesses in 2014. That is more than London in the same year. Fransk said that the cost of living, skilled workers, and the widespread use of English give startup businesses a reason to come to Berlin. The German capital has about 100 fintech startups. These include German mobile financial services firm Number 26. Fransk said he expected Berlin also to get inquiries from foreign startups that were interested in London but are now considering other countries. The competition among cities that want fintech companies will be tough. Fransk says he considers Amsterdam to be Berlin's biggest competitor. The Dutch city used to be home to a number of global banks and has fast data connections. I'm Mernush Karimian Ainsworth.
Officials in India's southern state of Kerala have placed a tax on hamburgers, pizza, and other fast food. The 14.5% tax will be added to foods at restaurants such as McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and Burger King. The tax is being called a fat tax because it adds cost to foods considered high in fat and calories. It is the first fast food tax enacted in India, where obesity levels are rising in the growing middle class. Kerala's finance minister, Thomas Isaac, proposed the tax after learning of similar measures in other countries. He hopes it will get people to choose to eat healthy food, which he said is going out of fashion. Dr. Anup Misra heads the Center for Diabetes, Obesity, and Cholesterol at New Delhi's Fortis Hospital. He strongly supports the fat tax as a way to reduce the number of diabetes cases in young people. We used to see diabetes 20 years back, diabetes at 50 or 40 years of age. Now we are seeing diabetes at 15 years of age, 18 years of age. Misra said he hopes other Indian states will also use fast food taxes. A government finance official in central Gujarat state told the Times of India the state is considering a similar 14.5% tax. This idea can also be adopted in the state, as we also have high consumption of junk and unhealthy food. The fat tax can be used as a tool to raise awareness of the harmful effects of junk food, the official said. India's fast food market has grown steadily in the past 15 years. McDonald's, Pizza Hut, and KFC already are well established. Other chain restaurants gaining popularity more recently are Johnny Rockets, Burger King, Wendy's, and Barcelos. Critics of the tax say it probably will not stop people from buying fast food. Some also believe the government is only using it to raise revenue. Officials in Kerala reject that idea. They say overall collections from the tax will be small. The fat tax will not cover local street vendor food that also can be high in fat and calories. The owner of a small restaurant in Kochi told VOA this is not fair.
The one food that is eaten widely in Kerala is the paratha, which is basically like it's high in fat, high in refined flour, high in trans fats, and it's cheap. It can't be taxed because it's highly unorganized.
Some doctors and health experts say the tax should also include other snack foods and sugary drinks sold across the country. Sheila Krishnaswamy is a nutritionist who heads the Indian Dietetic Association in Bangalore.
Is it enough? I don't think so. I think we need to go much beyond these, the burgers and the donuts and the French fries.
One fast food customer in New Delhi, Vijay Dioli, told VOA the government should deal with more important issues.
First, you have to clear up, the air, the water, many things are there. This is just a small thing.
Others say the government should do more to bring attention to fast food and obesity rather than changing people's choices. Many health experts agree that bringing attention to the issue is important. But Dr. Misra said education alone does not work. I'm Brian Lin.
This is what's trending today. British comedian James Corden is the host of The Late Late Show. A regular feature on his show is Carpool Karaoke. It shows Corden and a famous person driving around in a car, talking and singing along to songs on the radio. Many of Corden's past guests have been famous singers themselves, including Stevie Wonder, Justin Bieber, and Adele. But this week, Corden's Carpool Karaoke headed east to Washington, D.C. This week's guest was First Lady Michelle Obama. The 15-minute video shows Corden and the First Lady driving around the White House grounds. They sing some of Obama's favorite songs, including Stevie Wonder's Signed, Sealed, Delivered, I'm Yours, and Beyoncé's Single Ladies. The First Lady and Corden then sang This Is For My Girls. Obama released the single earlier this year. She released the song to raise money for the Let Girls Learn program. The segment aired Wednesday evening in the United States. But days before, Michelle Obama's appearance on Carpool Karaoke was a trending topic on social media. And after the episode aired, people could not stop talking about it. One Twitter user wrote, "Michelle Obama's Carpool Karaoke was the best 14 minutes of my July." And that's what's trending today. I'm Dan Friedel.
For VOA Learning English, this is Everyday Grammar. Have you ever been in a conversation and wanted to check your understanding? That is the time to use a tag question in English. A tag question is a short question added to a statement. The tag includes a pronoun and its matching form of the verb be, or auxiliary verb. If the tag question is negative, we shorten the phrase, or use a contraction with the auxiliary verb. Here's an example. I was visiting a friend and saw a photo on the wall. I said, "That's a picture of your grandson, isn't it?" My friend answered,
"Yes, it is. That picture is from when he was 2. He's a lot taller now."
In the example, I wanted to confirm something I thought was true. So, I started with a positive statement. "That's a picture of your grandson." Then, I added a negative tag question, "Isn't it?" My friend said I was right. The picture was of his grandson. English speakers use tag questions to encourage a listener to respond. You will often hear teachers using tag questions.
You remember the history lesson from last week, don't you?
Some language researchers say that men use tag questions more often than women. They think it might show that men have more power in the conversation and use tags to ask for information or agreement. Others say women use a certain kind of tag questions to make the conversation run more smoothly. Whatever your gender, when you use a tag question, you expect an answer. The form of that answer depends on the type of tag question. Let's look at the two types of tag questions.
We'll talk first about tag questions that follow a positive statement with the verb be. They use a reduced form or contraction. Make the tag question with the form of the verb be combined with the negative not and the pronoun. The verb be has to match the number and person of the pronoun. Take a look at these examples.
They are walking to school, aren't they? She is taking the bus, isn't she? I am supposed to be sitting here, aren't I? You're the math teacher, aren't you?
In these examples, you reverse the order of the pronoun and verb in the tag question. They are becomes aren't they? And she is becomes isn't she? If the statement uses another verb instead of be, the tag question uses an auxiliary verb, such as do or have. For example, in the song A Little Time, the singing duo Beautiful South ask the question,
"Need a little room for your big head, don't you, don't you?"
And,
"Your face has been looking like that for hours, hasn't it, hasn't it?"
If you ask a negative tag question, you expect a positive answer.
Question: it's raining out, isn't it? Expected answer: yes, it is.
Now let's look at tag questions that follow a negative statement. These are in the affirmative. You can use this to confirm that what you are thinking is true, and you expect a negative answer.
Question: you don't eat all the cake, do you? Expected answer: no, I don't.
Negative sentences with positive tag questions are not as frequent as our first type. They use the same form with reversed word order. Tag questions are an example of a big difference between British and American English. Language researchers using computer data found that British English speakers use tag questions 9 times as often as American English speakers. In Understanding and Using English Grammar, Betty Azar says that the intonation, or change in pitch, shows the purpose of a tag question. If the speaker is trying to confirm information, the tone rises.
Adam works at VOA, doesn't he?
Speakers saying something that they are almost certain the listener will agree with use a falling intonation.
It's a nice day, isn't it?
We leave you with a famous line from Carly Simon in the song You're So Vain. I'm Jill Robbins.
And I'm Jim Tedder.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.